It's Wednesday, December 16th. A vaccine is great, but it can't bring someone back from the brink. We start here. Healthcare workers may be getting immunized, but then it's back to reality.
I want you guys to all shift your mindsets to disaster mode.
And in some hospitals, reality now means no more hospital beds. If you get the shot, are you suddenly going to become a lot more popular?
It's not easy to get any of these companies themselves to actually talk about what they're doing.
What happens when some of us are immunized and others aren't? And top Republicans suddenly acknowledge a world in which President Trump isn't president.
So today I want to congratulate President-elect Joe Biden.
More than a month after Election Day, are tensions thawing on Capitol Hill? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. The thing that we've all learned together this year is that the more transmission points you have, the faster a virus is going to spread. So if just one person has it in your town, it's going to seem to spread pretty slowly. If 100 people have it, well, you'd be shocked how fast the rest of us can get it. Which, in a weird way, that concept also applies to the new COVID vaccine. For weeks, just about every vial of Pfizer's vaccine was tucked away at one facility in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Well, only so many planes can land in Kalamazoo, so on Tuesday, it hadn't actually gotten to that many hospitals yet, less than 150.
Just a day after those historic first shots, supplies arriving at another 425 locations, and vaccinations ramping up.
It is now available in more than 500. By the end of the week, that number goes over 1,000. So those pictures of healthcare workers you've been seeing getting the shot, that isn't going up in a straight line. The numbers are rising exponentially.
The news comes as we witness the emergency unfolding in ICUs across this country tonight. A record new for hospitalizations, more than 110,000 Americans in the hospital right now battling this virus.
But while hospitals might now have the resources to keep their staff safe, that will not stop what has still become a flood of patients, to the point where some hospitals just don't have any beds left. Let's go to ABC's chief national correspondent, Matt Gutman, this morning. Matt, you've talked to us from like strained, smaller hospitals. We are now seeing pretty big hospital systems in major cities that just, I guess, frankly, seem overwhelmed.
You're seeing, Brad, one of the biggest metropolises in the world, Los Angeles and Los Angeles County, buckle under the strain.
In LA County, more than 4,000 people are in the hospital. That's a new record. 21%, or about 850 of them, are in the ICU.
And those numbers will just keep going up.
LA County, for most of last week and this week, had more or as many new COVID cases as any state in the country.
Wow.
And you know, when you break down the numbers, you know, at a 1.5% fatality per COVID positive, you're talking about 600-700 deaths at some point 6 to 8 weeks in the future, just in California. And that's not going away. That, you know, once those people are infected, it's a statistical absolute that a vast, you know, a significant proportion of them, at least 1% and up to 2% are going to die. You know, I mentioned 10 million people, LA County, many fewer than 100 ICU beds remaining now.
100 for the county?
For the county.
Wow.
Let's deal with some sober realities. We lost 142 people in the last 24 hours to this virus, at least our report.
The governor has ordered 60 refrigerator trucks, 5,000 body bags. And this is the first time in the history of the state that the mass fatality program that it has been activated statewide.
That should be sobering. I don't say that, you know, I don't want people to run with that. I don't want people to scare folks. But this is a deadly disease.
They've never done this before. And they have this mass fatality program in event of terrorist attacks, major fires, which we've seen, earthquakes, but not a virus. This has never happened before.
Are hospital workers at least getting safer from it? Like, do they have, at this point now, 9 months in, do they feel like they have the resources they need to take care of people, I guess, if they do have beds for them?
You know, it's a tough question. Yes and no. At some hospitals, the medical staff say that they have plenty of PPE. What they don't have are enough staff.
So today, I want you guys to all shift your mindsets to disaster mode. It's going to be hard. okay? It's not going to be easy out there, but I want to think of solutions. I want to think of what can we do.
How can you sustain this pace?
I don't.
So they are exhausted. And I spoke to one nurse at Providence St. Joseph who's amazing. She has volunteered to do COVID every single shift for the past 9 months because she actually thinks that it's safer in some ways because she knows what she's dealing with.
You know, if I'm going to get it here, it's going to be from another staff member who might have been exposed to somebody outside. I don't feel like I'm going to get it from a patient.
Meanwhile, in Riverside County, a nurses' union has just announced a 10-day strike scheduled to start on Christmas Eve.
But a very significantly large nurses' union in Southern California that has hospitals in Riverside and L.A. County and Ventura County, they're going on strike, or at least they've posted that they're going on strike.
We don't have adequate staffing to allow us to not go out of ratio, adequate staffing to allow us to get a rest break. Things that we need as nurses because our mental health and our fatigue is already taking a toll.
They feel like they cannot tolerate this anymore, and they want the hospital to change the way it does business.
But so, like, Matt, if healthcare workers get the vaccine, like, yes, they're at less risk all of a sudden for being hit really hard by COVID, but that does not affect the patients, right? So I guess I'm wondering, is there hope for these people who are still coming into the ERs? Because, like, a vaccine does not do anything for someone who's already got COVID symptoms.
One of the reasons, Brad, that I kept hedging on the numbers of how many people die per 100,000 from who are infected with COVID is because science and medicine and doctors are getting better at treating patients every single day. They don't know everything that causes this virus. They don't know exactly how it acts, but they are a lot better at getting people healthy again.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking with every patient, but when you have those personal connections, It just brings another level.
You know, I was just in Billings. You described, you know, the small towns, and we were in Billings, Montana, the Billings Clinic, and there's an ICU nurse there who got COVID herself.
Ellen asked you, am I going to die? Mm-hmm. But you couldn't tell her categorically no.
Because a lot of what we see is that when people get on the ventilator, they do die.
She was on death's door 10 days ago. She was on a ventilator and on ECMO, a machine that circulates and oxygenates your blood. And the hospital said, you better get here quick. We don't know if she's going to make it through the weekend, Matt. So if you want to do the story, come now.
I love you, buddy. I love you. You got to stay strong. I need you. That's so much more to do.
Well, we came. We ended up seeing her in her room. One of her nurse best friends came in.
You just think positive, strong thoughts. We're going to get you through this.
And had this session with her, just holding her hand and talking to her.
We got you.
Okay, I'm going to hand the phone over, okay?
I can't wait.
Hi, Dad.
Ellen!
Hi.
Hey, your thumb's covering the phone. I can't see you.
And 10 days later, I've just interviewed her last night, and she's incredible. She's healed.
But as the nurses were explaining to me about what happened, I think I cried continually the first 48 hours.
One of the things that the hospital is doing is putting people on that ECMO machine sooner. Instead of just keeping them on a ventilator for weeks, they're putting them on a ventilator and ECMO almost right away. And apparently that simultaneous work of those machines in conjunction with all the meds that they're applying them with has had a really good effect, and they're getting more successful outcomes that way.
They told me that I was supposed to have been shipped out to Seattle, and they said, no, we will work extra shifts. We want to keep her here. We will do this for her. We love her. She's our family, and we've got this. And when I heard that, it still makes me want to cry because they're my family, and they kept me there, and they saved me. And they fought for me.
Well, and again, it just goes to show how important just having the staffers healthy is, that's one more person, perhaps, you know, that can help the people of Billings, Montana down the line. Matt Gutman in California. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
And from those dueling images, you can tell that the next several months are going to be filled by these weird paradoxes. Hope for some, devastation continuing for others, and anger over whether we are changing our lives too fast or too slow. And think about it. We now live in a world where a small number of people, very small at the moment, but it's growing, are walking around with a federally authorized vaccine for the thing that everyone else is terrified by. Well, what is that world about to look like? I want to bring in ABC's Zorin Shah, who's been reporting on how people and companies are getting ready for this new reality. And so, Zorin, I guess my first question is, like, when you get the second dose of this vaccine 21 days later, what changes for you?
Okay, so it's weird, because in one way, everything changes, right? But in another way, nothing does. Your chances of getting COVID symptoms goes down to less than 10%. But it's not clear that you still can't spread the disease to other people.
So we've got to get people vaccinated as quickly and as expeditiously as we possibly can until we get that herd immunity, as we say, which will require, in my opinion, about 75 to 80% of the population.
So if you spread it to someone with the vaccine, okay, fine, no big deal, right? This is where the herd immunity part comes in. So you want a world where the virus just can't get that far, right? And so people might, after this, feel a bit more comfortable visiting their grandma, for example, after they got tested. But at least early on, you're not going to see big changes. You know, where I am in Los Angeles, my city is not going to open up overnight. And right now, healthcare workers, they're at the moment the main people getting it. Of course, they will still have to wear masks.
And that's interesting, because my instinct, Zorin, would be to tell everyone, like, hey, I've been vaccinated. Like, don't worry about me. Like, worry about all these other people in the store. But me, I'm good.
Yeah, people will probably still do that, Brad. In fact, the CDC is still, they're right now printing stickers that actually tell people, I've been vaccinated, kind of like those I voted stickers, you know? That actually isn't going to get you into anything. That's just to get people amped and psyched to get the vaccine. Kind of like how, you know, every former president has come out and said that they would get the vaccine on TV. Right now, it's just a campaign to get more people feeling positive about being vaccinated.
We shall now begin the drawing, John. First MEV-1 vaccination are those people born on March 10th.
And, you know, you remember that moment in Contagion in the movie where, you know, the guy has like that immunity bracelet and he goes in. But that's not what our world is going to look like. You know, the big question is, how do you treat people who have been vaccinated versus those who haven't? And right now, that doesn't exist. That process doesn't exist.
Yeah, because like I was thinking, if I've been vaccinated, like, is there a need for me to use those like disposable knife and forks at a restaurant, right? Like, I'm not going to get ill because you gave me the real silverware. Or like, is there going to be a section of people on a plane that like one group of people is vaccinated? Like, let's put the unvaccinated people at the back. I guess that's what I get concerned about looking forward.
Yeah, I mean, right now, all those questions are the ones that businesses are trying really hard to figure out right now.
Yeah, we are looking at changing our terms and conditions to say for international travelers that we will ask people to have a vaccination before they can get on the aircraft.
I mean, you've heard the Qantas, you know, CEO say that they are looking at vaccination passports and highly considering those.
An electronic version of it that certifies what the vaccine is. Is it acceptable to the country you're traveling to?
Clear Health Pass offers you and your customers the confidence to move forward.
But one possible solution that I've been really fascinated by is this idea of a vaccination passport on your phone. And in fact, there's one company out there, Clear, and you kind of know them, you know, those kiosks you see at the airport.
Right, from flying.
Yeah, if you're a subscriber, you get to cut the line. Okay, so they are working on a way to make it easy for you to link your lab results to their app on your phone.
Jane is now ready to enter any participating venue with Clear Health Pass. Here's how.
So if you've taken the vaccine, you know, the screen on their app would show up green, for example.
Clear's developed touchless technology can take her temperature and confirm Jane is Jane, so she can walk in with confidence.
You know, they've already done this in a couple of different places for COVID tests. So they're working with sports teams, with entertainment venues to get this in place. And, you know, what's interesting is it's not easy to get any of these companies themselves to actually talk about what they're doing. Because few people want to actually come out and say, hey, Brad, if you don't get a vaccine, we're not allowing you into you know, whatever.
That's what I'm
venue.
Trying to figure out. Like, the passport sounds cool, and I feel like it would put people at ease, but could they actually say, like, no, you're not getting on this flight or whatever if it doesn't light up? I guess that's still, like, so unclear to me, so to speak.
That is going to be yet to be seen, but I think a lot of people really do agree, and kind of there's this understanding that in order for us to get back to reality, to those 10,000 person concert venues, you know, or those sports arenas, that a substantial number of people inside, that most people are going to have to be vaccinated.
Super Bowl preps are underway, and today the Bay Area, despite the ongoing pandemic, the question a lot of us have is, will there be any fans allowed inside Ray J, and if so, how many?
The show will not go on as originally planned. The 93rd Academy Awards
telecast has been postponed by about 2 months.
New details tonight about an ambitious plan by the Golden State Warriors to welcome fans back to the Chase Center for games.
And so you're thinking about the next year. People go to Oscar parties, and February is the Super Bowl. And then, you know, kind of in the early spring, you have Coachella. And I think it's fair to say that none of these really big events are going to happen, but there's a chance we could start to see people feel more comfortable with these smaller gatherings again, right? Like, if grandma's been vaccinated, maybe people will feel comfortable inviting her to a small Super Bowl gathering and see her. And so, you know, you wonder if people might actually feel tempted to have that smaller Super Bowl party.
Yeah, like, that's the thing that turns this around. On an individual level, you think, hey, one and done. But really what this is about getting everyone vaccinated as quickly as possible. Zorin Shah, tracking our immediate futures. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, it's a lot easier to cut deals when you can at least agree on who the next president will be. Back after the break. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November, and while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Remember we told you the Electoral College had cast its votes earlier this week, cementing Joe Biden's decisive victory on November 3rd? Well, bright and early yesterday morning, you saw the effect that this had. Suddenly, people who had aligned themselves with President Trump were a lot more comfortable referring to him as an outgoing president. This included foreign leaders like Vladimir Putin. The president of Mexico called Joe Biden president-elect, but also Republicans in Washington. ABC's Trish Turner covers Capitol Hill. And Trish, has the vibe changed since, the Electoral College is pretty boring, but since they finalized this, is it a different tone?
Yeah, most of the time we don't even notice that this is happening, you know, but yes. I would say a sea change here on Capitol Hill, mainly because the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, he finally, after nearly 50 days past the election, he acknowledged that Joe Biden is indeed the president-elect.
So today I want to congratulate President-elect Joe Biden. The president-elect is no stranger to the Senate. He's devoted himself to public service for many years.
And the two even spoke by phone. I'm told that the former vice president, he's a former senator, so a former colleague, he called Mitch McConnell.
We've always been straight with one another, and we agreed we'd get together sooner than later. And I'm looking forward to working with him.
They had a good conversation. They worked together on deals before. He also recognized the outstanding accomplishment by his former colleague from California, Senator Kamala Harris.
Beyond our differences, all Americans can take pride that our nation has a female vice president-elect for the very first time.
And I have a feeling it'll have a trickle-down effect because I got to tell you, Brad, we've had really mixed, you know, all across the board reaction.
Yeah, it's a very, very narrow path for the president. I don't see how he gets there from here.
Some Republicans just refuse to acknowledge. Some, it's really quite the feat of verbal gymnastics.
You got to have a winner and you got to have a loser. But I think once the president's any legal arguments that he wants to make between now and then are exhausted, that certainly Joe Biden's on a path to be the next president of the United States.
But I would say it's really notable that Mitch McConnell did so yesterday.
Well, ABC's Robin Roberts actually had an exclusive interview with Kamala Harris last night. It's airing on Good Morning America Today, where Kamala Harris talks about being recognized by Mitch McConnell now.
I applaud Mitch McConnell for talking to Joe Biden today. You know, it would have been better if it were earlier, but it happened. And that's what's most important. And so let's move forward.
But does that have a trickle down to like the practical world, Trish? Are lawmakers going to see more eye to eye when they're talking about legislation, when they're talking about like COVID relief is so important? Does that change anything now?
Right. It really remains to be seen if it has an actual effect on business as it relates to Joe Biden's administration, because, you know, they really are waiting for the outcome of those two Senate races in Georgia to see who gets to, control the chamber.
Send me these two men and we will control the Senate and we'll change the lives of people in Georgia.
But this Congress still has its work to do. There is a really big COVID relief package and a government funding package that are still being considered. There's a lot of work to be done. And last night, we saw a bit of thawing.
We're not leaving. I assure you, we're not leaving until we finish this package.
We saw positive signals from the leadership. No deal yet. It is due any minute. They are long past due, actually. But we did see positive signs.
For the first time in months, right now, Democratic and Republican leaders are meeting in Speaker Pelosi's office to try and finally hammer out a deal.
But what would they be talking about now, Trish, that they couldn't be talking about like 2 months ago? Like, what would a compromise even look like at this point?
That's a great question, Brett. And I can tell you, like, cynical Capitol Hill reporters standing around in these hallways for hours had a whole lot of deja vu last night. We have been talking about the same things for months. You know, the sticking points are state and local aid. Republicans don't want it.
I've been saying for weeks, and you've been listening to me saying for weeks, let's put aside the things we can't agree on and do the things we can.
Liability protection, especially for corporations, Democrats don't want it.
The Republican leadership is blocking a solution for the entire country until they get a favor for corporations who don't even need it.
Democrats have held out for a lot more money, a bigger package. You know, the Biden win brought them a little bit of, you know, took the pressure off somewhat since they know they're going to get more later. But, you know, Republicans have pressed the pause button for months. You know, they waited. And so now they've backed themselves right up against a really hard deadline. And, you know, it remains to be seen if they'll get this done. Positive signals. But, you know, that we've still got a ways to go.
Many of us have personal guarantees on our businesses. Without help, we could lose our homes.
We still continue to see groups begging, pleading with Congress to come to some kind of deal. You know, yesterday, the representatives for the live venues, entertainment industry, they were here asking the Save Our Stages Act. You know, they're desperate for money.
Thank you very much for the PPP you gave us in April. It ran out in June. The virus is still with us. That money is long gone. I urge you by this Friday, and whatever it is that you pass another round of PPP.
Can't say enough about the independent restaurant industry. They've been begging for the same type of relief. They've just not been helped by the programs that have existed so far.
All right, Trish Turner, there at the Capitol, still waiting outside these offices, waiting for some sign of progress. Keep it up, Trish. Thank you.
This is my life. Thanks, Brad.
And And one last thing. Speaking of Joe Biden, he continues to fill out the most diverse cabinet in American history.
I'm not asking for a Japanese-level standard of train travel. I would settle for an Italian level of train travel. It would still be a hell of a lot better than what we have right now, and an important part of how we meet our climate goals.
If he's confirmed as Transportation Secretary, Pete Buttigieg will be the first openly LGBTQ person to assume a cabinet post ever. Richard Grenell would have actually been the first, but President Trump never got him confirmed. Grenell was always an acting cabinet member. But listen to this. In France, yesterday, the City Hall of Paris got fined more than $100,000 for being too diverse. Well, in the eyes of the law, not diverse enough. See, in Paris, there is a law that says when civil servants get hired, you can't give more than 60% of the jobs to one gender. The idea was to make sure that women get equal consideration. Well, a while back, the Paris City Hall hired 11 women and 5 men at once. Women were more than 60% of these hires, hence the fine for not enough diversity. The real issue here is, what makes someone part of the majority? Is it about numbers, or is it about being discriminated against when you go out into the world? Recently, a Washington public school system circulated a document about the achievement gap among students of color, except they grouped white and Asian students together, to which Asian families said, sorry, no matter what's happening in school, that somehow doesn't exempt us from being a minority. The school district has since apologized for the decision. Meanwhile, in Paris, the mayor called this ruling absurd. The law has since been repealed, but that fine will stick. Hey, if you've not given us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts yet, tis the season. Smash that 5th star. It really does help us out. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.